Well, it's a tale of two leaders, two speeches, two governments, and two hashtags in today's podcast. The hashtags, Sturgeon resign. Well, that's been trending, but actually, it seems to be mostly full of English people saying, why would anyone want Nicola to resign? She's the only leader who's showing empathy and not trying to militarise a public health crisis. The other one, Barnard Castle, trending the minute that Boris Johnson started talking about individual responsibility and fault. We're exploring all of that, all the feelings that come with realizing that we're back with restrictions for possibly a while, and the solidarity we need for getting through the whole thing in one piece. Those are the headlines. Now for the podcast.
Hi, chums, and welcome to this week's Leslie Riddick podcast. Yeah.
Just keep going. That's quite good.
Hi, chums, and welcome. Yeah, I'm going to keep that in. Welcome to this week's Leslie Riddick podcast on this bright 23rd of September, 2020. It's Bruce Springsteen's birthday, but more momentously, it is the fourth anniversary of the very first podcast that we did, and this is episode number 173. A round of applause for both of us, but more importantly, a round of applause for you folk that keep us coming back and doing more. So it was a big day yesterday. We had the reason why we couldn't record was that our electricity was cut off, and it was hoped it was going to be back on in time. And we got to that certain point in the evening where Leslie and I made a big decision, and the decision based on previous experience, Leslie, which was?
We talk mints after 7 o'clock at night.
Yeah. So not after 8 mints, after 7 mints. That's the... God, that's an old Stanley Baxter joke. It was the Stanley Baxter show where he says, after you've wined and dined them, it's time for after 8 mints. And then comes along, puts a big dog with mints on the table. So, God, the things that you remember.
Yeah, oh, your brain, what is it like, actually?
Mints, that's what it's like. Yeah. But anyway, so yeah, it was 4 years ago today we did our very first one. Aye, and it was. I haven't dared go back and listen to it because Leslie turned up here and says, "Let's just do it here," and it was all about the pharaohs, something we've returned to, and I knew nothing umpteen times in the past, and I knew nothing about the pharaohs then, and I think
And now you feel like you've almost been there.
I've almost been there, and I'm desperate to go. All I knew about that point, as I remember, was chunky jumpers, and there were a couple of lads who from the pharaohs who are doing a joint honours degree on politics and geography when I was at MVU University in 1970 to 74. So yeah,
honestly, you know, for Mastermind you would be an absolute slam dunk, but what would be your specialist subject?
It could be
any of millions.
Well, funnily enough, there was one person's specialist subject was mod culture, and I got 20 out of 21 right. The only one I didn't know was the name of the original band that Ronnie Wood, who joined the when the Steve Marriott left, what was the name of his original band? I think it was the Thunderbirds, but I didn't know at that time. So I got 20 out of 21 on mod culture. And also on Richard Thompson, I did rather well. So, I mean, there you go. So
this actually does fit in, right? Because obviously then, since you might not be a Mastermind sort of finalist, it's the old pub quiz that you would be so brilliant for.
Oh,
a
yeah.
place that we basically have now got to sort of treat with some...
Yeah.
Well, distance.
This is it was quite funny because I had a virtual pub last night almost with my friend Paul Thornton from Dublin, and he was telling me all about what's going on in their local lockdowns, where Dublin has been locked down completely, but County Wicklow just across the board, you can anyway. So we were talking away about that. But if I can't go to a pub and sit and chat with a pal, you know what I mean? It's the talk. It's a beer and a talk that does it for me. And I haven't been in a pub since lockdown. It didn't feel like a bit. And I'm talking about not feeling like it again. It was a most odd day yesterday because it struck me pretty hard the inability to now go and see my grandkids, because I've been, because of the way where I was, I've seen all of them virtually every week for the last 8 years. No, initially looking after Freya Rose on my own, and then looking after Oscar, and then now since Joel's retired, going through to look after wee Juno. And it's a little hole and a little gap which is a physical gap, a physical emotional feeling. And I think, you know, I think that's what I wonder. I mean, I think there's a lot of people feeling that way today because we can't seem to have come so far. We seem to be getting back to what some kind of normality, and then we'll have to take a step back. And it hit me harder than I thought it would. I got very irritable. I wasn't my usual cheery self at all. Things were annoying me that really shouldn't have annoyed me. And then I stopped and I thought last night, and I suddenly realised I was feeling down about not seeing my grandkids anymore. And that must go for people with family and friends right across the country. And people are on edge. And it's how we actually get through this working together to enable us to come through it. And how we can come through it together and how we feel about it. I think feelings are absolutely essential and central to everything that's going on just now.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And it jumps into, you know, the performances, as it were, last night quite quickly. Yeah. Because, I mean, I think Nicola Sturgeon, you know, again, seemed to be able to anticipate that. I mean, to be honest, you'd think that anyone with human contact would be able to figure out that this is exactly how people would be feeling, that, you know, it feels like a letdown. It feels like, in fact, it's in a sense, it's kind of, you know, it's almost like a recurrence of some really difficult disease that you thought you'd beaten. And that, you know, the idea that you've kind of, you tell yourself a narrative. I mean, you know, I've got an autoimmune problem, and that kind of flares up and goes up and down. So you kind of tell yourself a bit of a story, you know, you kind of adapt your diet, you keep taking whatever it is, immunosuppressants, and you will become a healthy person again. And kind of actually that you sort of know that's sort of not really how it happens, because the healthiest people get stuff sort of out of the blue. And, you know, on the one hand, you need a narrative, you need a sort of transactional sense of, if I do this, then that will probably happen in life. But on the other hand, it very rarely turns out like that, you know, for sure. So I wonder if we all kind of really knew that, you know, if we took on board anything that people were saying at the beginning of this, and if we really registered at a deep level any of the deaths and the randomness of it and the ferocity of it, if we really took that on board, I wonder if we really thought with one bound we were free just because it was the summer. Yeah. I think some of the kind of also the depression that you feel now is that apart from today, where in the East it is a glorious day again.
Oh, it's fantastic.
We know we're heading into the winter, and psychologically that's just a sort of down thing as opposed to, you know, being in the spring. So there's a lot of reasons that this just feels really gloomy. But, you know, in that, that's where kind of good, as it were, good leaders set the template for essentially, not, I was going to say how you're allowed to feel, and that's ridiculous because clearly, you know, no leader tells you how to feel, but in opening up things about the way that she was speaking about, you know, we will get through this, we will look back on this, and it will be over, and, you know, all pandemics end. We've been through the, you know, worse things have happened two generations ago to the parents and grandparents of pretty much everyone who's watching, and we know they got through it because, hey, look, we're here. She's kind of being able to stand back and back to kind of essentially look over this, to give the perspective of someone who's able to see the end of it. And that's not like a guarantee, but it's obviously common sense. It's true. And in a way, it's kind of, she's encouraging people, okay, you can have the feelings you've got that it is really disappointing and isolating and all the rest of it, it is. But also to kind of project your brain over this to see that, you know, somewhere down the line, this does go back to normal, despite all the kind of gloomy predictions there are around. And we just need to keep getting back to helping one another and thinking creatively and so on. Yep, here we are again.
Yeah, because, I mean, it was, again, it was interesting on Good Morning Britain. She actually continued to emphasise how bad she felt, how vulnerable she felt. And again, I have no problem In fact, I appreciate a leader talking about love, because, I mean, that's, I mean, it's like the Beatles song, "And in the end, the love you get is equal to the love you give." I mean, I know that sounds trite, but as I've got older, I think these statements that were made back in the 60s and things like that, and talking about love and talking about working together and not finger pointing and not blaming and being emotionally sensitive. And I compared and contrasted her presentation, the words that she used, her tone, her body language with Boris Johnson, who, again, it's one of these things, the great Groucho Marx quote is, when he was asked, what's the most important thing in show business? He says, sincerity, sincerity, sincerity. And once you can fake that, you've got it made. And again, what I was watching with Boris Johnson was a performance. The hand movements, the reaching down, the dropping in tone, it was an act. And it was surface. And again, maybe I'm maligning the man, but I just thought it's an act, it's surface, it just didn't ring true. And I've got, as everybody knows, I've got my issues with the concept of leadership. But I do appreciate in a crisis, as we've talked about before, leadership is absolutely essential. Clarity of communication, leadership, empathy, and understanding. And again, there was a whole lot of leaders yesterday. We got Keir Starmer's speech as well, which we can come on to later if we want. And we had Ruth Davidson, the leader, and all these different leaders talking. And Nicola Sturgeon was head and shoulders in terms of clarity of information, in terms of emotional sensitivity. And if she's faking it, she's doing a damn good job. I genuinely, though I have it, as I say, difficulties, I genuinely believe she wasn't. There is an emotional sensitivity and an awareness of people are feeling that way that actually takes the wind out the sails of opposition when she speaks.
Mm-hmm. But if you're looking, I had a wee look on Twitter just afterwards to sort of see what people were making of it. And I was I suddenly realised, of course, the thing that was trending was Barnard Castle.
Yes.
Because, you know, and this was basically mostly, I imagine, from reading it down, it was mostly sort of really annoyed English people, really, looking at Boris, looking down the camera and saying, you know, everyone has to take individual responsibility.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, here's one here, you know, too many breaches of the rules, says Boris Johnson. We don't have a picture of him to hand, so here's one of Dominic Cummings instead. Retweeted 17,600 times.
Wow.
You must all obey the rules or you'll be fined £10,000, says Matt Hancock, who publicly gave full backing to Dominic Cummings when he broke every lockdown rule. Retweeted 37.5 times. You know, it's astonishing how everybody said this, that nobody would forget the Dominic Cummings business. And, you know, even people pointing out that the point, well, you know, I have not been able to check this, but that the kind of uptick in transmission seems to have coincided with the aftermath of that little jaunt. To be fair, it might well have coincided with a lot of other things as well. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting that people are putting those things together. That's the narrative that they're telling, despite the fact there is no leader, no political leader putting that together.
Yeah.
So, like, nobody, you know, nobody's either mad or brave enough, you choose which it would be, to walk into that space. You know, not Keir Starmer, not Nicola Sturgeon, who keeps resisting most,
yes,
you know, the opportunity to give a pretty good kicking on a lot of fronts. Nobody's walking in and saying, you know, you kind of reap what you sow in life. And we all said this will be the problem you have, getting everybody to follow stuff. The second thing would be the punitive nature of the tone that's coming out. There's going to be the army supposedly at hand to kind of enforce stuff. And this is, I think, what happens when you don't think that you earn respect in life. You think you basically assert it. And that's why these things, people will say these are small distinctions. They're just tonal issues and so on. And some of that's true because it's hard to deviate further without more fiscal powers to do a kind of furlough scheme here. But here's what you get. This is exactly what you've got to imagine. Language springs from somewhere. It springs from the same wellspring of outlook that gives you policy direction. And what this language tells you is that the British government is full of simply assertion, command, and authority. That's the kind of, that's the rocket fuel that this government works upon. You can hear that there's more persuasion, encouragement, and sort of empathy, really, working through the way the Scottish government approaches things. And that's really crucial for how people respond. I mean, here's this extraordinary thing where the Scots across the UK have long had a kind of, you know, hackneyed reputation of being the BAMs. You know, if there's anybody that's going to basically heed the ball, it's going to be us. We're going to be the ones who won't follow rules. Begorra. You know, here we are when we get, I was listening to Jason Leach this morning on Radio Scotland. And I mean, okay, you know, sometimes I can get a bit carried away. I'll quite concede that. But there was a point where he was talking to somebody about, I can't remember, something to do with childcare in a school. And it just as an off point, he just mentioned, yeah, I know my wife used to teach English to small groups. And she was quite peripatetic, moving around a lot of wee schools and stuff in North Lanarkshire or in Lanarkshire where they live. And I just thought, just take that sentence for a second. Every single authority that you hear from the British government is Sir somebody, Lord somebody. They're all, you know, they're all essentially knighted and kind of elevated. They don't talk with an accent that the bulk of the population does. They certainly don't, I think, have partners who are kind of at the sharp end, this government, who are teaching kids on a daily basis. And they're not easy about just sort of mentioning it. It's quite clear that's where a lot of his outlook comes from, because, you know, he's in a family that's pretty much dealing with people all the time. So there's a lot you can read and understand from just the tone that's being taken at the moment by the Scottish government, which you've got to say is extraordinary. And just even it struck me listening to Boris as well, words that he uses, like he talks about, we will succeed in this. Mm-hmm. We will win this battle. We will rise to this challenge. I mean, it's all kind of, it's almost like he's dropped by accident into some sort of supercharged, simply the best turbocharged, you know, corporate presentation event. And he's got to kind of talk it up. There's no other default. There's no other gear in there. There's just fifth gear corporate approach with a little bit of kind of hand wringing. And that's not just what's across this whole COVID thing now. That's what basically English people are walled up alive with now for 6 months, which I must imagine if we're feeling a bit wobbly today, jings, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the other thing about it was this, I couldn't figure out his pronouns. I mean, he was using you and we and them. I mean, it was all over the place. And again, it was just that I thought there was an absolute lack of clarity of someone actually taking a step back and say, no, what we've got to do is bring people together. We're all in this together, which was he was trying to say. But again, as you just even just in terms of the crafting, in terms of it, I thought, I mean, you're all over the shop, pal. I mean,
that's a bit like Gordon Brown's smile.
Yes.
It's like somebody else has said, you need to smile more, Gordon, you know. And then when he does, it's not his smile. Well, when somebody said to Boris, you need to reach out and sound like you care about people a bit, Boris. So occasionally it jumps in, and that's where his grammar changes out of, you know, because it's not coming from anywhere.
Yeah.
It's just, oh, God, yes, I should talk about you again, you know, and then it just throws him. So, yeah, it was a burach.
Yeah, the other thing, there were a series of, again, when I watched the First Minister's statement yesterday, and then there were a series of, again, Ruth Davidson got up, and apart from her initial point, she says people are feeling angry and feeling cheated. I thought, that's an interesting take, cheated. She then rolled back from that and was very low-key and talked about care homes. Very specifically about care homes, and then there was an answer given to that. It was Richard Leonard who actually went on the attack, and his line of attack was on transparency of information, competence, and then about the track and trace system. And I thought, this is an odd one, considering, you know, there's been, when you actually, and Nicola Sturgeon mentioned this, I'd actually seen the research, which the Times did, where they phoned up, I don't know if you saw it, where they phoned up and tried to get appointments, and Scotland was showing very, very, very well. I mean, really good figures in comparison to England. And I thought, what's he on about here? And that only made sense when I actually listened to Keir Starmer at Prime Minister's Questions, when that was the line of attack he took against Boris Johnson. So it was as if it was down the line, here's what you're going to say, whether it fits the facts or not, this is the line you're going to take, Richard Lennon, which I don't know if you saw that one.
That was
he was introduced at the Labour Party virtual conference. We now give you we now give the leader of the Scottish Labour Party, Richard Lennon. And you could actually see the look in his eyes saying, oh God, where do I go from here? You know, that's the party.
There's no party. It's just a try.
Yeah. Well, when you add that to misspelling Hardy incorrectly at the Scottish Labour Party conference, and Jeremy Corbyn referring to Willie Rennie McIntosh, you know, it was one of those ones. And you're thinking that man, he's been left out of the limb. But it only made sense when I put that into context of the fact of that's the smack of leadership, again, which is the theme going through it, which is Sir Keir Starmer was emphasising.
Too blooming clever for your own good there, football. Yeah.
But, you know, it was that. And what then led to was, and I kept thinking, the Tories have soft-pedaled. And then lo and behold, and again, it's the way it's done on Newsnight last night, Emily Maitlis was talking to Jeremy Hunt, and he was very, very mellifluous in saying, well, I would hope that Nicola Sturgeon isn't doing this deliberately just for political reasons at a time of a pandemic, just doing this. Alistair Jack was interviewed this morning, and it was a great line of questioning on Good Morning Scotland, where he actually said he doubled down initially on, well, she's only doing this to be different, but actually what the Scottish government is not doing that much different from England. We're focusing on the whack-a-mole, local lockdowns, and why are they doing it up here? But he was all over. He was absolutely all over the shop. And when he's questioned about the fact, well, you don't seem to be putting the boot into Arlene Foster for doing this before the Scottish government did it. And then he went on about it there. So again, they were all over the place. They're not absolutely certain how to tackle this position that Nicola Sturgeon and the Scottish Government find themselves in, where all research across all age groups, Prof Steve Riker was talking about this, shows that right across the age groups, people are very pro what the Scottish Government is doing, and in fact are in favour of more strict action in order to ensure the health and safety of the population.
Yeah, and I mean, on all the interviews there were last night, and it's worth pointing out that, you know, Piers Morgan was tweeting later that, in fact, there's a little clip of it on the news sites that, you know, Nicola Sturgeon pops up and basically, you know, takes the questions and deals with the heat. He thanked her on Good Morning Britain and then said this stood in contrast to their repeated requests for anyone from the British government. And they actually had a little clicker where they went through 148 days. Yeah. Since they've had Boris Johnson. And of course, Channel 4 News just regularly have nobody at all. So anybody who's basically going to really probe and take some time and, you know, and know their stuff and have all the awkward questions, and in fact, have preceded your interview possibly with so many kind of reports from the chalk face that this is now not an interviewer you're contradicting, but actually the preceding half of the programme. Mm-hmm. Nah, they're not going to turn up to that. So, you know, kind of all of that's true. But yes, there's a little bit of worry about the future capacity for Test and Protect, because it's the laboratory analysis that seems to be the sort of pinch point. But at the moment, and Channel 4 had a thing where they'd gone through the rest of the country, you know, huge journeys being required of everyone. And the only one they chose randomly in Scotland, the guy had got a booking the next day and got his result within 24 hours. So it's worth seeing all of that. I mean, I said last week stupidly that I would try to understand how this whole thing works. As far as I can see, you know, the system in England seems to have started with a system run by Public Health England and a system run by the NHS, which, you know, for starters, that's like, right. And then there was problems with delays there. So the British government, started issuing these massive contracts to the likes of Serco, G4S, Siemens, and so on, who also then seem to have sort of run aground. That's the bit that was spoken about in the previous podcast by someone complaining that there had been the same, you know, not just even one contract, but multiple contracts and subcontracts with different standards for when a test has been sitting too long, all sorts of inability to kind of have the same standards now within five different ways of testing. And that's just England. It still baffles me, really. It seems to be the lab analysis that is one of the issues, although most of those I thought were going through Scottish health boards because that's the difficulty in getting tests back for any other purpose. So I think I've failed actually to understand really why we're still in such a pickle here, potentially regarding the analysis of laboratory results, and why we've ended up with Scotland essentially taking a smaller share of the testing. So doubtless somebody will jump in and explain why, unless you too have been across this one, Madhir.
No.
Right, let us move womanfully on.
Yeah, well, the only other thing I was going to say about that was that Prime Minister's questions yesterday, Ben Bradshaw, the Labour MP, actually said that wasn't one of the major issues in terms of the spread of the virus, the lack of an appropriate test, track, trace, protect system operating in England. And to which Boris Johnson's reply was, well, that's because we're a freedom-loving country, unlike these other countries. And you're going, what? And I was completely and utterly taken aback by an absolutely fatuous response.
But that, that seems to me, those are the ones that are genuine Boris.
Yes.
You know, because those are the ones, that's what when he's sort of up against the wall and has to come out with something really quickly, that's what, because even last night I noticed again this weird bit where he was sort of saying, you know, and you can imagine almost my horror at having to sort of, you know, infringe the liberties of any. And that's when you're on genuine Boris, this idea that the world's just a great free for all. You know, there's no way that he would stand between a man, because it would be that, and his pint. You know, that is the acme of civilization. Yeah. So that is always his default. And it's actually there. It doesn't get affected by whether it's logical, relevant. It's like he has to come out with it. You know, it's like somebody's pet story and you go, oh God, you've told us this one 7,000. Yeah. Me and the pharaohs, right? There you are, right? So it's like that kind of thing. You know, if there's an answer to anything, it's got to be this one. And he's just stuck with that because that's all he's got.
Well, that and the fact that you talked about a narrative. What was again clear this morning with Alistair Jack, he tried to roll back from it. This, and again, I've heard it from other people as well in the general public who have a conservative perspective on matters with a small c, not necessarily a large c, finger pointing and blaming individuals for breaking the rules. And that's the narrative. And then Alistair Jack said, oh, no, I'm not blaming people. To which Gary Robertson said, well, that's precisely what you said 30 seconds ago. Oh, no, but it wasn't that. So this individual, it's your fault if you're overweight. It's your fault if you break the curfew. It's your fault, you know. And Steve Reicher was very, very good about this, saying that this is a triangular situation. You've got the government, you've got the public, you've got businesses, all having to operate together and cooperate to ensure the health and safety of the population. And if you shift the focus and make it individual responsibility, and we've seen that individual responsibility right across, it's your fault if you're poor, it's your fault if you're out of work, it's your fault that there's climate change, it's all individualized, it's your fault because you're overweight that you're contracted COVID, you haven't looked after yourself properly. And it's that individualization that is an ideology that stretches right across the operation of Conservative governments and New Labour to a great extent, that is actually permeated and is evident again in the tackling the COVID crisis. Oh, well, we're going to finger point at people. And again, compare and contrast. Steve Reicher was talking about that, and Dr. Hillary this morning on Good Morning Britain, and others. This a cooperative approach that is actually, the message is entirely different and just seems to be, you know, far more inclusive and thoughtful than what has been presented elsewhere. But it's just writ large what the ideology of these people actually is. When anything happens, it's your fault, pal.
It sort of makes me think as well. I watched that documentary, The Social Dilemma. Have you seen it yet?
No, I haven't.
It's sort of, well, quite a lot of people talking about it. It's the one that's on, I think it's on Netflix, but it's basically, it's a pretty major expose of the thinking and the operations and the control exerted by all the giants, Google, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, the lot of them, by a huge kind of lineup of former chief executives of this, that, and the next thing, who all still look like they're about 23, actually.
Oh, right.
but who are kind of fessing up, really, to sort of feeding, basically super feeding the idea that the universe, I mean, we know this already, that the universe basically is the way you think it is. Mm-hmm. And kind of, I suppose, people know this already. But it's the idea that feeding people, if you even look on a Google search engine and start to put in a search term, it will even bring up the search terms that would be most likely for you. See, right. You think that's an objective, 100%, that's the most popular search term, whereas it's not. It's, you know, if you're a lefty and you're kind of searching for Boris Johnson, you're not exactly going to get Boris Johnson's a plonker, but you'll get variations on the theme.
Yeah.
If you're if you're Michael Gove, you know, you're going to get sort of, well, you probably get the same Boris Johnson as a plonker, you know, keep your kind of wits about you, Michael, you might have a second crack at it. But, you know, that was the thing that kind of quite shocked me. And then, of course, this was an American program about America. And it's looking at the way, I mean, there was an astonishing report by Krishan Gurumurthy from the States about the militias. There's now a big black militia, very openly organized, the biggest one in the world, as they describe themselves. The guy who runs that pointed out there's 435 million guns in America, more than there are people. And black people are getting armed, or of course, are arming up, because then you saw the footage of the white, essentially the white kind of militias that are arming up. And then you kind of look back to what the suggestion was, and in fact some people were saying within this Social Dilemma program, which was that the idea you're in camps and that there's people out to get you, and that there is opposition, conflict, threat everywhere, is being super served by the way social media is reinforcing your very small group thinking. And I can't help thinking that, you know, this business of whose fault things is, once you introduce that sort of little virus into things, it's very easy for everybody to just suddenly just leap off onto blaming minorities, blaming people. And actually, it's astonishing, given all that, that, I mean, again, I really hesitate to sort of be essentially in any way bumming us up, because, you know, we're just ordinary folk. But somehow there seems to be an ability to roughly keep a proportion on this, despite the fact I would imagine Scots are using social media as much as anyone else. Yeah. But then perhaps getting reinforced within that ideas about tolerance, you know, or a Janie Godley video, which is kind of funny, well funny and well sharp, but always has, remember, wash your hands, you know, all the key points, be kind to each other. And so, like, all these things eventually feed back into your little body politic, because they are quite specific in within the way social media works. So, you know, I kind of wonder if south of the border, once you've started to introduce this fault thing, it just begins to resonate right round, which is possibly why Barnard Castle was the first thing trending last night, because people thought, no, it's not our fault, it's Dominic Cummings' fault.
Yes.
And the point is, once you start, you know, that kind of thing, you fall with it.
Yeah, I mean, I keep, again, sorry, when you were talking about that, it's this whole social media, and again, what I kept thinking about was focus groups as well, in terms of political parties and political movements reacting. And again, it was this, I was really completely taken aback. I came with Sir Keir Starmer's speech yesterday, which, I mean, and I don't know if you've seen the new Labour Party logo under new leadership or new leadership, and it's a union flag. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking to myself, and he was very, very specific within that. He had a triumvirate of leaders, which was Attlee, Wilson, Blair. Now, that's the first time I've heard a Labour leader, you know, since Blair, embracing Blair and saying Blair won elections, Wilson won elections, Attlee won elections. I mean, three very, very different people. The other triumvirate was the NHS, NATO, the Good Friday Agreement, the three pillars there. And again, he talked about family. He talked about patriotism in comparing and contrasting that with nasty divisive nationalism. Again, that was the only time that Scotland came up. He was talking about a party that represented the whole of the United Kingdom, which I thought would come as news to the Social Democratic and Labour Party, but in Northern Ireland. But it was a wrapping in the flag, and he talked about the proudest moment of his family was when he was knighted. Yeah. And again, he was knighted by the monarch, and he was knighted by the monarch because when Boris Johnson was out writing about Bendy Bananas, he was defending victims and prosecuting terrorists. So there you have it. What is happening, comparing and contrasting what Douglas Ross has done up here, he seems to be triangulating to the left. You know, again, what we're going to provide school meals for bairns up here. I mean, the ones you voted against down in Westminster, yeah, we get that. We're going to expand, do all these lefty things. Whereas there is obviously, I think they've given up on Scotland, the Labour Party. They've just gone, we've had it up there. It's irrelevant. Richard Lennon can go do his own thing. They've had it. We're going to focus on winning back the red wall. And we're going to do this because we think what they want is this. And there was absolutely no statement of, there was a lot of statement about values. And Lisa Nandy went on about that later as well, which is an interesting quote. But the statement about values, there was nothing about policies. And when he was asked very specifically on Martin Aime policies, he said, well, the next election is not till 2024. So we'll give you a manifesto then. So he's going to be talking about values. He's going to try and emphasise all that with absolutely no policy positions whatsoever and just hope that the Tories implode over COVID and over Brexit and Boris's leadership.
Mm. Well, do you remember, I'm sure we talked about this at some point when Keir Starmer took over, that analysis after Boris, I think, showed that the Red Wall seats, the north of England that they've lost really, are actually all for public ownership and kind of like, you know, they're kind of, if you like, politically left, but they're socially conservative.
Yeah.
And it found that these two things sit completely together, that people are, you know, the north of England can be quite, patriotic, pro the army, but military rather, kind of pro the flag, all this kind of stuff, pro Brexit, which is an expression of all that sort of, you know, Britain first lark. And that was the bit they felt Labour had left.
Yeah.
You know, they obviously didn't, you know, sure, they've got the sort of like, you know, nationalisation and these kind of things were quite popular as much as they'd ever been. But it just was a kind of belief that there wasn't a kind of, that there wasn't the surround, the sort of belief in Britain, the flannel, I would have thought, that was necessary to kind of believe in their leadership. So it looks like that's exactly what Keir Starmer has jumped to. He's just going to fill in all those blanks. And a problem for them, some of that is, I mean, I didn't watch him, so it's hard to know if this is another Gordon Brown smile, you know, a paste on that basically doesn't really feel like he believes in it, or whether this is really his thing. You know, he is, after all, Sir Keir Starmer. He did accept that.
Yeah.
So he clearly has no problem with being knighted with all of what that means for somebody. So perhaps it's possible that he actually represents precisely the blend of, I don't know, myopic thinking that wouldn't go down in Scotland at all, but may well appeal. You know, maybe this is his genuine outlook. But the other thing I'd imagine, and maybe it's a bit like in the States, you know, who knows, we could live to regret all of this, but Joe Biden might be all that's acceptable in terms of a shift from Trump. It could be that, you know, moving mm-hmm. towards Bernie Sanders was just too much of a mind jump for people mm-hmm. from where Boris was, from where Trump is. I don't know. And maybe that's what Starmer thinks he's doing. Yeah, I was at the post office this morning and the chap in there was saying, you know, Boris, he's no right. He's not been right since he had, you know, COVID. It's had a huge impact on people and he's not making sense. And he should stand back. He should take, you know, he should move back and let someone else take over. And I said to him, well, gosh, you know, who would you put in there? And he said, well, I don't know. Matt Hancock. God almighty. You know, that is like, that's my 1 second button. I mean, like mm-hmm. he's even off before, you know, yep. kind of all the Liz Truss, which is saying something. And he went, yeah, yeah, you know, I know he's not very good. You know who would be better? That new Labour guy. So you see, like, just now, yeah. this is a bit like the apocryphal taxi stories, you know, that everybody yeah. relays when they used to go on, you know, any kind of broadcasting thing when they'd actually traveled there by taxi. And the only human being they'd actually spoken to in their recent lives had been the taxi driver. So I quite appreciate that's one person's outlook. But that sort of, you know, just thinking along the lines, he just looks a bit more competent, sounds yeah. a bit more sincere. And he isn't discombobulating the rest of your universe in terms of politics. And that seems to be sadly where we are with stuff at the moment.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd have to say that's true in Scotland too. We are not mm-hmm. having any politics in Scotland at the moment. You know, we're not having any scrutiny of any other aspects of what's going on. I was a little aerated by some reports that were going on about potentially the Scottish government endorsing a sort of blue hydrogen strategy,
yes,
which is using fossil fuels. This has been put forward by the oil and gas industry to use fossil fuels to basically produce hydrogen. Green hydrogen is produced using renewables. And there's no need. In fact, it doesn't really help you at all with your problem to be using fossil fuels in this way. But we can't get much of a focus on this at the moment because all we're talking about really is COVID and then people's sort of tonal approaches to stuff. Mm-hmm. There is no, you know, where's the politics going on about anything at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, that's when people say it's all plus when people say it's all about the Constitution. It absolutely is. So you've got COVID putting a stop to politics and you've got the Constitution putting a stop to politics. Because as was rightly said, I mean, when the First Minister, Nicola Sturgeon, said we would do something entirely different if we were allowed to borrow, we would be extending the furlough scheme. Ian Blackford raised this in the House of Commons, no chance. Labour raised it in the House of Commons supporting extension of the furlough scheme. And then lo and behold, the Labour Party up here opposed the extension, you know. So, again, all over the place, but normal politics cannot exist just now during COVID, and normal politics is on hold until we resolve the constitutional question. We can, as we've said before, we can operate in mitigation, but so many of the levers are controlled from Westminster, 80-seat majority, take it out of that pile, we just do what we like, but give contracts to our mates, we can do all these things. There's nothing you can do. We've got an 80-seat majority, and nothing will return to normal in terms of analysis of an appropriate strategy for tackling climate change. Social and economic fairness cannot happen while we're tied to a devolved government, while we're tied to a devolved government where the power rests with Westminster, and the debate continues where we will focus on dividing lines in terms of the Constitution rather than dividing lines in terms of how do we actually tackle climate change? How do we tackle equality? How do we tackle fairness within our society? It's all on hold. And this is just, you're absolutely right, Leslie. But what this has done is actually made it absolutely clear that it's all on hold until we get independence.
Yeah, or as well. I agree with that. But also because the Greens are doing, I think, a good job of opposition in mm-hmm. as far as anybody ever hears about it or gets any airtime. But, you know, the big kind of parties, if you like, the Tories and Labour are doing such a really rubbish job of, yep. whole, you know, the stuff that they're grinding axes, which we all know are really not the issue. I want to hear somebody coming in and the trouble is the way Holyrood's structured, all the parties are pretty much reactive. Mm-hmm. So they only get the chance to sort of put forward ideas when the SNP puts forward their proposals, which is a kind of pretty limiting way of doing things. It's a limiting way of the rest of us understanding where they stand with anything. So, you know, there's a huge problem there, I think, about the quality of leadership and the things they choose to just as you illustrated, that really poor sort of missing the plate in front of you kind of thing that Richard Leonard does. Mm-hmm. Just sort of devalues his coin so completely that nobody's going to listen to potentially some fair, you know, any reasonable yes. stuff he's coming up with about anything else. Unfortunately, you've taken the tempo of, you know, Ruth Davidson and Richard Leonard, and you've basically, you're not listening, you know, most, well, independent support is not listening anymore, but I suspect quite a lot of their own support are not listening anymore to any of the content. They're simply getting support because they oppose independence.
Yes.
And this is all the worst place to possibly be, because we effectively have no domestic opposition, except in as far as they're trying to, a lot of the time, weaponize failings that aren't perhaps the source, the really key thing. I mean, when I listen to, you know, anybody from the Tories trying to tear a strip off the SNP because of a lack of number of teachers.
Yes.
I mean, it's, I don't know how people keep their temper, actually, you know, because it's like, what was that whole last austerity cutting, you know, gee, it's really hard to sort of listen to that. So we've lost having any serious kind of light being shone on a lot of domestic policy. And that just cannot be good. And that cannot be resolved till we've got we've got independence, really, because it will keep going on like this.
Well, I mean, you mentioned the blue hydrogen. There's the scandal just now about farmed salmon. That's going under the radar because of that. There's again, we've talked about it in the past, the lack of progress on land reform, this managerialism about land ownership, about grouse shooting, about all these range of issues that everybody's holding their tongue about. We're holding our tongue, we're holding fire.
Well, when you really get down to it, is the SNP going to have a virtual conference?
Yeah.
You know, because Labour are doing it. The Tories are going to do it. Lib Dems are going to do it. You know, and there's still nothing said from the SNP as to whether or not they're actually having a conference. But I mean, given that they're, you know, the NEC has, which is a controversial enough little body, haven't met regularly over the summer either, then what is going on within the party itself? And, you know, it's not, I'm not trying to rain on anybody's parade here, because we do, you know, there's a sort of thing where I know from conversations I've had with folk when I've had to point this actual just boring old fact out, that people just don't want to hear now anything that kind of dilutes their confidence. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's a thing that, you know, as First Minister and in her role as a leader in the COVID crisis, Nicola is doing really very well, but she has many hats. You know, she's also the leader of a party. She's also an MSP. And in those respects, as far as the party's concerned, and they obviously all relate all the way through, you know, there's a lot to be desired.
Yeah. It's again, and what's sitting simmering in the background, and I don't know enough about it, is the whole fall out from what happened with Alex Salmond and the inquiry that's going on and leaks of various documents. I'm not going to go into, because I genuinely don't have a handle on it. I would don't want to offer any opinion or thoughts on it. But that's simmering away in the background, waiting. Again, everything, as you've rightly said, is submerged by COVID. And quite rightly, it's a pandemic. It's a matter of life and death. But these things aren't going to go away. But someone who has gone away was Lord Keane, who actually did the decent thing and resigned because the UK government was going to break international law. And so we're now left with a situation that wonder who the heck's going to take that up. The Scottish legal profession up in arms. And I note that Peter Drummond, the eminent architect, and again, this was in Construction News, not exactly a left-wing newspaper and pro-independence newspaper, saying that this were the new UK internal market was a threat to building regulations in Scotland. And it's something we talked about after the Grenfell tragedy in 2017, was that Scotland, we had a fire in Irvine, I think it was 2003, and immediately changed building regulations. Now, we've had these different building regulations operating since time immemorial, but before devolution, across Scotland and the rest of the UK, not a problem. And yet, this could be something that be taken back on board by the UK government if this UK internal market bill passes. So what we've got again, and I thought Joanna Cherry was absolutely excellent. She gave a terrific speech about the legal system. And I was highly amused when Martin Doherty Hughes, who comes from the same religious background as myself and Joanna, raised the fact of the Scottish Covenanters objecting to the common book of prayer imposed upon them by the Anglo-Catholic King Charles. And I thought, well, there you go. There's two folk from a Roman Catholic background bringing up the Covenanters to stress the separation of the Church of Scotland and not to be told what to do. And that was part of the union. But it was an excellent speech there about the legal profession. We've got the building professionals coming in here now. So it's something you mentioned before, a shift in possibly in civic society there of people seeing what's coming down the line with a smack of firm centralised government that could shift areas like Edinburgh, Glasgow, of these middle-class professionals who would have felt safer and more secure within the United Kingdom before Brexit.
Yeah. And another kind of good thing is that actually was on, I can't remember where I saw that, but it was a pretty mainstream news report. You know, you didn't have to search that one out, so that wherever that came from, that's now the media beginning to smell a rat everywhere and beginning to put two and two together, or a professional body figuring out what this meant. The thing about the Grenfell, for example, I don't know that was anyone in the SNP or whatever that did that. No. So, you know, it looks like that's the media at long last beginning to, well, you know, they're basically expecting porkies now from Boris Johnson, and seeing that many of the warnings that they dismissed as being a bit hysterical or politicised are actually turning out to be true.
Yeah. Well, the other thing about it was when the Keir Starmer made his speech, Pippa Krerer of the Daily Mirror posted something on Twitter to which I replied. And it was an interesting conversation because she, and again, she included in an article, the Daily Mirror, that he seems to, you know, he's not resolved Scotland. He's not. So this is not going away. But as I say, that shift that's taking place, again, within professional organisations and thinking about it, you say it's not coming from the SNP. It's not the usual suspects that are putting forward these perspectives. I think it's a very, very, very interesting move. I'm just going to come back to something again to come back to the beginning about feelings yesterday. I'm feeling a lot better now, having spoken with you and hope everybody else is. Yeah, cheered me up no end. It was the fact I posted Michael Marr's All Will Be Well, again I'm feeling it now. Was it what an absolutely marvellous expression. It sums up to me, and again, I noticed it for the first time yesterday we did it. He uses the phrase "bring you flowers of the rarest," which is from an old Catholic hymn, by the way. And it's a beautiful song. And again, I recommend to people just to as we think our way through it, that all will be well. And it was worth listening to, and again, just to go back in it, that we're coming through this, COVID's with us, all these other things are going on, but that's hanging over everything, and all will be well. So talking about all will be well, I believe you're not far from being big in Japan, Leslie. You're big in Norway.
This will be the book, The Hut Split.
Yes, yeah.
I'm not a great one for watching the metrics of how things work, but the publishers tell me that it does say on the Amazon site that this is the book, the Hut's book, is the number one book about Norway at the moment. And I did sort of say to them, do you think they count books that are in Norwegian about Norway? And he said, no. So I'm probably kind of like one of one or one of two or something like that. Although I think it's also number three in politics and Scotland. So that's, you know, but anyway, the first run of the books is out, so there's no Amazon and the publishers, you know, have got no copies at the moment, waiting for the next lot to come. But I have a little pile because I kind of had a rush of blood to the head and thought, right, I need to get some ordered, and then promptly, you know, orders stopped. So if anybody wants a book, there is an orderly pile here, and you can get booking and so on leslieriddick.com, where you can also read more about this very podcast.
Yes, yeah, it looks terrific. And I just wait to say, if anybody is thinking about buying something for Christmas, ignore the Neil Oliver book. I mean, if you're wanting, I've rarely read a more scathing book review. I think Dorothy Parker once wrote a review of Hamlet, where she described the king. He played the king as if he expected someone to trump him with the ace in the very next hand. Well, that was akin to the scathing review of Neil Oliver's book. I have rarely seen a book review which left the author without a name. So if you're thinking of buying a book, ignore the Neil Oliver, go for the Leslie Riddick. Well, that's it. I think we've gone on that cheery note that Leslie's sitting with 200 books.
And 500 little flyers. You know, I did get a bit carried away with myself. It's just I sort of so feel now for people that are trying to run shops and figure out supplies and stuff like that, because it's really hard to read what you actually need in life. But still, it's all good. And that's the point, you know, because even since we've been speaking, because I looked on Twitter for something there, I was shocked for a minute to see a trending thing, resign Sturgeon. I thought, what? And then when I look at it, the reason that it's trending is because people are absolutely wellying into the few folk who started this off. So somebody from England who's saying, for those using the resign Sturgeon hashtag, down here we just have Boris with no adult in the room. No regular updates, no clear leadership or rules, constant backtracking, no human touch, and now the threat of military involvement and fines. She seems all right, you're Nicola. So actually, you know, that's quite good as well, because it's sort of what comes around, and using a sort of trust thing and a kind of compassion thing gets people to sort of come out of their corners and stick up for the politicians that are reflecting a sort of human approach that you could live with for the next 3 weeks, 6 weeks, 6 months. Mm-hmm. You could just say to people as well, I stopped drinking 20 years ago, and I just thought to myself, what would happen if you just stopped drinking completely for 3 months to just see what happened? Mm-hmm. And I remember at the time thinking, 3 months, my God. And then I'd thought to myself, can you remember what happened in the last 3 months? I mean, like, you know, 3 months goes like that.
Yeah.
You know, the problem with life, in fact, is that it goes far too fast. Mm-hmm. And some may have felt that the last 6 months went extraordinarily slowly. So fair enough. But in general terms, you know, 3 months in our busy lives with our routines and all the rest of it is a relatively short period of time when you look across our entire lives. So, you know, we can handle 3 months. We can handle this because we will work together, and we know that about ourselves now.
Well, I've got nothing to add to that except absolutely spot on, Leslie. And we'll see you next week, chums.